Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
The last of the Titans.
In the passion and death of their struggle, the very art that had raised them to such Olympian heights was lost. Their techniques vanished.
Referee giving instructions here to both principals, and this should be one whale of a match to wind up things here in Madison Square Garden.
All right, fans of the Titans of Wrestling, if you're digging this show, you got to know that we've been doing them for a while. We've got an archive of shows that you're going to blow your mind. Just head on over to the Place to Be Nation to check them out. Titans of Wrestling Archives, you know you want to hear it.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Titans of Wrestling. It's been a while, fellas. I'm here with Pete, as ever. How are you doing, Pete?
Doing fantastic, man.
And the one and only Johnny Sorrow. How are you doing, Johnny?
Exhausted. I've worked 12 days in a row, but I couldn't miss getting together for a Titans.
Well, doing it for the working man, Johnny, and sure. And Kelly.
I'm also great.
Great, and well, we're gathered together for a bit of a, I guess you could call it a Christmas special at this point. We're into December. basically we're gathered because I've been wanting to do a show about promos and about talkers, guys who are really good on the microphone. I'd say for about 2 years now. And, well, we just finally decided we're going to do it. You know, why not? Who better to talk promos with than three of the most knowledgeable fans in all the world, Johnny, Pete, and Kelly. So we're going to take a long look through the different decades. But before we get there, I just want to go around the table here and ask each of you, what do you look for in a great promo? And I'll start with you, Pete, and then work around the table. So what do you look for in a great promo, Pete?
Well, the first thing I look for, obviously, is does it make me want to go buy a ticket? Because I think ultimately that's the most important thing of a promo. Is it going to talk people into the building? Which always is important, because that's what the bottom line in wrestling is, to make money. Another one I always like, does it entertain me? Do I believe in what the person's telling me? Do I believe in this promo? Does it accomplish its goal? And does it get its point across? So I think all those things are the most important things of really doing a promo. But the most important one to me is, does it make the person listening want to buy a ticket?
Great. And Johnny, any thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, all of that. And that's what I look for in great old promos when they were trying to get you to go to the arenas and stuff. But at the same time, there's also the promos and mic work that you'd see in Memphis, you know, when it's just conversations going on at this TV show. And so you have that sort of promo work being done in the modern age. But at the end of the day, yeah, I just wanted it to be convincing. You know, even if it's ridiculous, I want the person, basically, I want the Michael Hayes thing. I want the guys to just believe what they're saying, even if it's fucking stupid.
So like authenticity, basically, Johnny, you're talking about authenticity.
That and just that I believe that the guy who's saying this bullshit isn't, believes in it. Basically, good acting is what I'm looking for.
And, Kelly?
Yeah, I have, a lot of the same points. Authenticity was my first one. You know, I have to believe them. I have to believe what they're saying. They have to be true to their character. Confidence is, you know, essential, of course. They have to be dynamic. the ability to be serious and funny is a big key, I think. The best promos, I think, are ones that can go back and forth between the two. Pete said, the ability to get over an angle, make you want to pay for them to see the, or to pay to see the match. And that's, like Pete said, the key, and that's the key for me as well.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add, and I just broadly agree, goes without saying, I agree with all of the points that you've said so far. I guess the only other one I'd add is the ability to not only get yourself over, but get the whole situation that you're talking about over. Your opponent, the mm-hmm. belt, the angle, whatever the thing is, making you buy into the whole thing. And I guess as we get through some specific examples during the course of the show, I'll maybe flesh out more exactly what I mean there. So I thought it might be fun to go through the different decades, starting with the 70s and ending up with now. And then at the end of this, after we've been through all of the different decades, we're going to pick a kind of overall Mount Rushmore. We'll each have a four. Doesn't have to be all from different decades. You can actually, they could all be from the 80s or all be from now if you wanted it to be that way. So any four guys. No, I'm just kind of laying out the rules, making it all clear here. So
mine are all going to be from the 20s.
I'm going to be ironic, and mine are all going to be from the days of the silent films.
You're going to pick off
Gotch Hackenschmidt, just based on looking at the still pictures.
So, of course, this is the Titans of Wrestling, so we have to start with the 1970s. So who are some of the great talkers of the 1970s? When I say 70s and we talk about who was really good on the mic, who springs to mind? I'll go with you first, Kelly.
Well, first and foremost, I think Dusty Rhodes for me. And this was where he, exploded as the American Dream. Great promos. Superstar Graham, another one you got to think of immediately. Legendary, super influential. And then I like some New York guys, Bruno Sammartino. Although there's not a lot of footage of Bruno cutting promos in the 70s. He's got a pretty big reputation, and plus his work in the feud with Larry in 1980 is magnificent. And I'll go with Lou Albano as another guy kind of on reputation as well, but there's footage of him out there. He was considered one of the main forces that drove that territory, and it was because of his talking ability.
Okay, well, I mean, Dusty, when you say Dusty, obviously my mind goes to the 80s. Have you seen much like Dusty 70s promo work?
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sorry, go on, Kelly.
Yeah, well, his feud with superstar Billy Graham in New York in 77 produces a lot of great promos that are out there. They're on various DVDs and such.
The movie,
and also,
the movie I Like to Hurt People.
Right, yeah, and there's also there's a fair amount of Florida stuff from the 70s out there, here and there, scattered around, where you get a lot of pretty cool Dusty promos.
So why don't we just pause on these three guys that you've mentioned then, Dusty Rhodes, Billy Graham, and Lou Albano, and why don't we just think about what made each of these guys a great promo? Because, how do they measure up to the criteria that we each laid out? Because, I mean, the first thing that springs to mind for me is that all three of them are very entertaining on the mic, right? They're all really, they're funny, they're charismatic. Mm-hmm. Whether they're babyface or heel, you're kind of like, laughing with them in a way, sometimes laughing at them. Any thoughts, Johnny?
It was so funny when you gave us criteria for this project. I assumed we were leaving managers out and just talking about wrestlers. So I didn't write down any managers.
Any managers you want are all fair game.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
Call it in the ring, Johnny.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, entertaining and bombastic. Those three guys. They stood out amongst everybody else. And I'll tell you, when I was doing research, I was going through, I found like lists of everybody who worked everywhere. It was just like scrolling through them and being amazed at how many people. I'm like, none of these assholes were a good promo. There's the ones that stood out. And in that those days when you had Bob Backlund mumbling and your typical baby face, you know, hey, hi there, I'm going to win. And even heels just having mouthpieces, having managers. When you had guys like Dusty, you know, as that kind of baby face, and him and Graham are, you know, basically have the same speech pattern. Exactly.
That kind of Southern preacher deal, right?
Yeah, which is inspired by a guy I wrote down, Thunderbolt Patterson.
Yeah.
From the 70s. You know, everyone says, you know, or at least he says everyone lifted everything from him, but, you know, whatever. And then Albano is the New York version of that. You know, he doesn't have a Southern accent. He's a big, loud New Yorker, but he's just as over the top with that character. So that's, I think, the what ties those three together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of feel that, more so Dusty and Albano than Billy Graham, although I have to say that of the three of them, I've definitely seen more of Albano and Dusty on the mic in terms of cutting promos. It feels to me like Dusty's got a few different gears. Like he can do like a fun promo. He can do like a kind of super serious promo. Mm-hmm. He can do like the almost profound, you know, the very famous ones that we see in the 80s, you know, Your Hands and My Hands and Hard Times and all of that, which is kind of like next level. You know, it's actually breaking through to something like pushing wrestling to be almost beyond itself in a way.
I just want to say, when we're talking about Dusty, and to your point, I think so many of these guys we're going to talk about were in all these decades at some point or another, so there's gonna be a lot of blending of that. I don't know about you, Pete, or you, Kelly, possibly, but I watched Hard Times, quote unquote, live. You know, that Saturday, I turned on the TV, and that promo aired. You know, I didn't see it on a collection later, and I remember being in the living room and just feeling like this jolt of electricity in my chest that I was like, that was unlike anything I've ever seen. Watching wrestling, it was that powerful. It was like, just like you said, Parv, it was something on this other level.
My Dusty powerful moment was an eye for an eye when the Road Warriors went after his eye and he cut the promo, which actually led to him getting fired.
That's a great one.
And I right. that was the one I never saw Hard Times live, but I saw the Eye for an Eye live, and I was like, oh wow. And then later on they blended it with that great Starcade music. When he was always doing an Eye for an Eye, boom, 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 you know, that Starcade theme from 88. Always an awesome moment.
My lightning bolt.
Yeah, for some reason, the one that sticks with me is actually a bit later. It's actually after he retired when, you know, that whole angle they did with Dustin and stuff. I thought
that was really, the Clash, yep.
Yeah.
That was really powerful, I thought.
For a second part, I thought you were going to say something from the Polka Dot era, because I know how much you love that era. No, I'm being serious. But yeah, that Dustin thing, oof. Amazing.
And of all the guys mentioned, I think Dusty, like you were saying, Parvin, you hit it on the head, is I feel he's like the most versatile promo. While Bruno, I thought he was a money promo, but it was very, you know, you believed in him, but it wasn't like entertaining like how Dusty, he was always, you know, the son of an immigrant and the Italian hero type of theme. And I always thought Superstar Graham was kind of one-dimensional in a way. Well, but what he did was fantastic. But mm-hmm. it was, he was all rhyme and, you know, and and that type of thing, where he'd rhyme and it was super charismatic in a way. While Dusty, I think, he could do so much. He was just a more versatile promo where he could cut different ones. He could just cut random ones on a Saturday night just to entertain you, or he could go do the big money promos like we've just discussed, or he could do humorous promos or whatever the situation arised and stuff. Yeah, Dusty, I thought, was just a more versatile promo than the four that Kelly mentioned and stuff.
Yeah, Superstar Graham does promos about going to the New York building of the Office of Hospitals.
for me, there's actually a lot of Muhammad Ali in Graham. Like,
oh yeah,
he feels very Ali inspired. A lot of his lines.
I think Ali's been credited with influencing
Blassie.
Dusty and Superstar. Well,
and Blassie says he's the one who actually influenced Ali. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was most likely Gorgeous George that influenced Ali, because he saw him in the early 60s at a show.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it works both ways. But Ali, yeah, definitely Ali was such a huge figure and so visible that he definitely, you know, inspired people of all, from all forms of entertainment, and wrestling was definitely one of them.
Also, right now, let's bring on the reigning worldwide Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion, the man who, when he probably got back to the dressing room in Boston, went, phew, because, Mr. Graham, you almost lost.
I was sweating. Matter of fact, I was, as you know very good and well, I was carried back to the locker room. The man literally, bodily, physically, and maliciously and viciously threw me over the top rope against the plexiglass used at the hockey matches and ruptured practically my spleen. And I was carefully, physically dragged back to the locker room, and the belt was dragged behind me by the skin of my teeth. I held onto this belt, unaware that the American dream was so vicious, unaware that he meant business. But now that I know he means business, I'm going to be on the defensive. The Grand Wizard covered my plan, right, Grand Wizard? Defense.
That's right, defense all the way. The Superstar and I are aware of the viciousness that lies between the evil heart of Dusty Rhodes. Well, American Dream, you're going to be in for quite a surprise in Boston, because the Superstar and I do have the new strategy, and you, son of a plumber, gone down the drain, little tidy bowl man.
The Grand Wizard of Wrestling, along with Superstar Billy Graham. Right now, we did indeed make reference to the ranked number one contender earlier. Let's bring on the son of a plumber. Let's bring on a man whose dream appears to unquestionably be on the proper path to come true.
I just was rapping before I come up here to probably one of the greatest athletes in our country today, Bob Backlund. And he told me, he said, if they got a good defense, he said, you got to counter it with a good offense. And it's very true, because the American dream is offensively. You know, I'm minded that way. I'm geared to offense, you understand? I'm geared to moving. I'm geared to jabbing. I'm geared to moving. I'm geared to takedowns. I'm geared to taking Superstars Billy Graham's big 22-inch arm in my hands and ripping up on it. And he be talking about, I was hurt. You know what was hurt about Superstar Billy Graham? His feelings were hurt. His feelings were hurt because when he went home, his whoever he was with say, boy, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for letting that man jump on you like that and nearly beat you half to death. The weasel went out and got loaded on milk and everything. It was so messed up, he didn't know where it was going or what it was doing. The whole town was electrified. It's going to happen. Superstar Graham will find the end of a rainbow. The dream will win in Boston.
I'll go back to Bruno being, you know, I mean, yeah, Dusty's, you know, on another level for sure. Dusty's probably the all-time greatest promo in history. But Bruno had a side, like a serious side, that I don't think very few wrestlers have been able to touch that I've seen from promos. And I'm specifically thinking of, yeah, the Larry Zbyszko feud. I was just rewatching that a lot of those promos earlier today, because I'm working on the last or the latest At the Garden that gets into that era for Bruno. And they're just amazing. Remember the one he did the day after Larry turned on him in the empty arena?
Oh, yeah.
With Vince, that was so cool because he starts out.
That's his best one that I've ever seen. I mean, he's done a lot of good ones, but to me, I think that was like the...
I like the one where he's got the scar.
Yeah, and that was the other one I watched today, too. Mm. But the one in the empty arena is so great because he ties it into, you know, growing up in Italy during World War II and how he didn't think that he'd ever, you know, have like experiences as bad as that again. And, you know, how the whole Larry thing was like a waking nightmare for him. And then, yeah, the one where he has the scar on the forehead, he just gets angrier and angrier.
Yeah.
And he's just going and going. He just hits this awesome crescendo peaks at the, and it's awesome.
What I think it is with Bruno, and this is, like you say, Kelly, I also think that he's got something that I've basically not seen any other wrestler have, is that, okay, when Dusty tells you he's the son of a plumber, it does hit home, and that, you know, people told him he was too fat or whatever. All of that stuff is authentic. All of that stuff is authentic. But, like, Dusty went to college, Dusty was a sports star, you know, like, he's had, like, some problems, but... When Bruno says it, and he's actually like come from, you know, fascist Italy.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked on the docks. Like probably, like some of the guys in the crowd have had the same experiences, or like he understands. Like he's literally with the, like you can't get that kind of salt of the earth stuff in the same way. I don't think.
In part of that, this just occurred to me, but what you just said brought it out. About when people say the attraction of Bruno was based just on the Italians in New York, when I think it's exactly what you said. It's a shared experience of World War II, and it's that generation, and Bruno represents that to them. I think that's a big part of that connection. I think you just hit upon something.
Yeah, but I mean, but I'd even go beyond that because I think, like, remember all those different shows, you know, the Philly show. Do you remember that? The one that always sticks with me is the Atlantic City show we watched in wherever they were. But, like, look at the people who were in those crowds, and they were all, like, factory workers, like, proper, like, old blue-collar guys. Yeah. And
or even guys whose older brothers or even dads, you know, were from that generation. But, yeah, blue-collar, definitely.
And well, but Bruno was there. I mean, he was working with, I mean, he literally went, as I understand it, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he basically went from working on the docks to being in the ring, like, more or less overnight, wasn't it?
More or less, yeah, within a few months, probably, yeah.
And I just think there's something about that you can't replicate, like, it, you know, just the experience of going to college, for example, changes you from that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Well, there's no question about that. You know, Larry Zbyszko right now, from listening to these interviews as I watch in a monitor in my dressing room, you know, to listen to him, he looks back in the early days of our working out, and you see, and he honestly believes that was the whole thing, that I was putting out everything in there, that I was putting all my strength, that I was applying full force in all the holes and so forth. And with that in mind, he really believes that it's going to be a cinch. He's just going to go in that ring and he's just going to beat me because he can outmaneuver me as he chooses to believe. He's going to outmaneuver me. He's going to show more holds than I have anymore. And as he put it, he's younger than I am in the years. There's no question about that. But you know, sometimes when you go into that ring and you meet someone, it's not always how much you even know. It's how much you have in your heart and what do you feel. And what I felt, you know, I've gone through an awful lot of pain with this experience with Larry Zbyszko, an awful lot of pain, more pain probably than anything. And I've had tremendous pains going back in my childhood in Europe with the war and everything else. I've known an awful lot of pain, and this certainly matches almost any pain that I've ever known. But that pain, Larry, has turned into bitterness, and I think I have just cause. Just cause. You have given me that just cause to be so bitter. And I am so bitter, Larry. I cannot tell you. You will never understand even what you've done to me. Because you have turned me into such a bitter man, and that bitterness has got to come out. And it's going to come out only when I meet you in the ring. But Larry, it's going to come out, and I think your mind is going to, you're going to blow your mind, because you're not going to believe that this is the same guy that you used to work out with in a mat. You're going to wonder to yourself, my God, where did he get this power? Where did he get this force? Where did he get this strength and this stamina? Because, Larry, you're going to see your teacher. You're going to see exactly how much he held back. You're going to see just how much he has in that heart and in that body. You're going to feel it all because you're going to feel it in that ring. And, Larry, you're going to say to yourself, my God, what did I do? I grabbed the tiger by its tail, and what do you do with it now? Because, Larry, when I get through with you in Madison Square Garden, I said before I created a Frankenstein, and I'm going to destroy that Frankenstein that I created. But more than that, Larry Zbyszko, you think that you climbed that mountain by using me, the guy who poured his heart out to you. Well, Larry, as I said before, you're going to make the biggest splash when you fly off that mountain and onto that bottom. You're going to make such a splash there won't even be a spot left of you. There won't even be a remembrance that even such an idiot as Larry Zbyszko even ever existed.
I do want to touch on Albano just before we move off Kelly's picks here, because I think Albano's a bit underrated too. It just in terms of he has got, I mean, Johnny, you've talked about this before, mm-hmm. but he's got different modes, hasn't he? He's got,
yes,
like
he
his,
does.
He's got like his angry one, he's got his funny one, he's got his... Do you want to go through some of the different kind of... You're a big Albano fan.
Oh, yes. I think with all the footage we've watched over the years doing the show is what's really revealed that. Because most everyone's memory is just Frantic Lou and Crazy Lou from TNT. In the end of his heel run when rock and wrestling hit, and then he was a good guy who was always bombastic and we've gotten to see him be calm, be very, very calm, especially explaining exactly what they're gonna do, and then we've seen him be crazy. So I just think that based on the footage, Albano was a far more versatile performer than he gets credit for, because everyone just remembers it's in anything. Everyone's going to remember what, you know, more people saw, mm-hmm. you know, especially in a huge boom period.
One bit of footage I went and seeked out one night, and this will entertain you, Kelly, because it features Willie Gilsenberg actually on the mic. I went and found like the one bit of footage that exists of Willie Gilsenberg making a decision.
Right.
And he basically finds Ken Patera for giving this job or a stretcher job. Like, he puts him in the backbreaker and won't let go. Right. And Albano's seething kind of, like, Albano, he also has like a kind of psycho mode, Johnny, where he's like mm-hmm. so seething with anger that you feel that he might legitimately kind of kill Willie Gilsenberg. And the way he can switch from that to... And then he literally switches on a dime to Jay Wellington Wimpy, kind of, yeah, I'll pay you the fine tomorrow. It's kind of the way he's able to do that. But the way Albano's able to do that is pretty rare, I think. So,
it even like plays up into the thing we saw with Snuka. Where he's finally, he's finally lost it.
Yeah.
He's all over the place.
Another thing that Albano doesn't really get credit for is like carrying the heel side of things in New York for, you know, almost 15 years, where he was the one constant. I mean, yeah, you had Blassie and Wizard too, but, you know, Albano was the most hated of the three managers. He was by far, I think. He had that extra bit of sleaze that you just, you know, disgusted people. And he was such a valuable member of the territory.
And when we think about it, because we watch enough, I mean, we've lambasted that tag team division pretty good, and Albano was the guy who carried that crapple division, you know what I'm saying? Crown jewel in that thing and actually made it work for the company.
Well, I mean, that's why how many tag teams did champions did he have? That's like the big giant...
14.
I think it was 14 or 15. I
mean, so basically, the teams were irrelevant. The belts were hits. You were trying to beat him.
Yeah.
The most impressive individual in many respects. If we can take a look at him, one of the managers of the year, Captain Louis Albano. Lou, congratulations. You're leading the votes.
Thank you, Vince. I'm so glad to see that I'm in the kind of forerun for this contest. And I'm so proud and I feel so elated, so fine and so good. Vinny, I really don't know what to say. All my many good fans out there for voting for me. Thank you.
Wait a minute.
What are you doing here?
I'm supposed to be here, Blasi. I'm in the running for the thing. I'm invited here as a guest. What are you doing here?
I'm running for the manager to
you're nothing but a jerk, Blasi. Well, I'm
wait a minute. Mr. Albasso, come on, would you? Wait a minute. Wait.
I've had enough! Vince, I want him out here! I want that son of a gun, Vince! I'll bust him in there! I'm not gonna stand here and be humiliated, Vinny! Vince, I'm not gonna be humiliated by Freddy Blassie! Give him to me anyway! I want him here, Vince! I'll destroy that punk, that dirty! I'm warning you, Vince! I'm not gonna take it from a Freddy Blassie! I'm not gonna take it! I'm not gonna take it!
Lou Albano and his commentary.
Why? He's really, that's too bad. I'll tell you, Albano's really, really angry, and I don't blame him after what that Blasi don't deliver such a cheap shot like that.
Okay, well, I do want to come back to Blasi and Wizard in a little bit, but Pete, I'm going to ask you for your picks.
Okay, well, are we only allowed to pick four or what? Because I wrote a bunch of people down, but...
Just like, who are some of the great talkers of the 70s? As many as you want, Pete.
Okay, I'm not going to name anyone Kelly name. So, Terry Funk always came to mind. The Assassin always came to mind. Freddie Blassie, John Tolos, Bill Watts, Bach, Winkle, and Flair. Even though I think they're more known for their 80s stuff. Jonathan Boyd was a guy I liked. And being a big St. Louis guy, Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher. Also, and ADWA always were interviews that I really always liked, promos.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think you're right. We'll say Flair for the 80s. Because, I mean, he's obviously going to come up, but he's synonymous with the 80s in my view. And I guess we'll save Bock for then, too, because even though he was obviously key in the 70s as well. So why don't we go through some of... Why don't we start with the Crusher and Dick the Bruiser, actually? Those are guys who seldom get talked about. What made those good promos for you, Pete?
Believability. I mean, they were super charismatic. I mean, they were characters... But what they said, and they always backed up their actions. And a lot of it had to do with the booking, too, because they very rarely ate pinfalls, and they were always protected in the booking. So their promos, they came across like the gospel, like, hey, I'm gonna go and knock you out and so forth or what have you. They might not have any like real super memorable promos, per se, but you always believed in what they were saying, especially in St. Louis, because I grew up on St. Louis wrestling, and Dick the Bruiser was St. Louis wrestling for a long time, and he was always protected in St. Louis, and he was, you know, we just knew he was like, we believed that he was the toughest man on the planet. He'd tell us that in his promos and then kick the crap out of somebody, and it was just very believable.
I also think that those two have got a bit of that same blue collar thing going on that I was talking about with Bruce.
Oh, for sure.
But if it, like, so where.
But with a Polish twist rather than Italian.
If Bruno is the guy that you work with on the docks, the Bruiser and like Dick the Crusher were like the two guys who you'd be having the beer with afterwards, you know, like, and you like you could see them having barroom brawls and things like that. That seems to be the type of baby faces they were to me. And of course, they were heels for years, weren't they? And then they turned. Yeah. So they've got that thing going on for them as well, Johnny, that you always love.
Yeah, well, they're basically Bruno is Terry Malloy in On the Waterfront. And the Crusher and Dick the Bruiser are guys who work for Johnny Friendly.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Who am I talking about? The former World Tag Team Champions, the Crusher and the Bruiser. And they've got one thing on their mind, to regain that title.
Since we've lost the title, the Crusher and I feel nude. We feel undressed. We can't stand it. We feel like we've lost our coat. We feel that we've lost the greatest thing we ever had, the world's heavyweight championship tag team belts. Now, we're right here. We're going to get our title back. We're going to get our belts back. We're going to beat the bums that stole our belts. We're going to get anybody that's in our way. We're not going to rest until we get our championship belts back. Come in here, Crusher, and show them.
That's right. When me and Bruiser were champions, we were on Waikiki Beach watching the dollies in the bikini suits walk by on the Waikiki Beach. Well, we haven't taken a vacation since then. We've been in the saloons fighting. We've been in the alleys fighting. And we're not going to stop fighting until we get them belts back. We don't care where it is, whether it is in the alley, in a saloon, any place we catch them bums. We send the one bum to the hospital when they won that title. We're going to send them all to the hospital. I've never been so mad in my life, and I know you ain't either, Bruiser. Even the beer's starting to taste bitter.
It's starting to taste warm, and it's going to be a warm day. It's going to be a cold day. We're going to fight each other if we have to, but we're going to win our championships back sooner or later, and it better be sooner. So anybody that's in our way, we're going to...
Hell, right, brother, I got to have something. I'm mad we gotta fight somebody. If we don't fight them, we gotta fight each other. No, we'll fight the frauds. We'll fight everybody. But let's fight.
Put that sissy shirt on anyway.
Take that shirt off.
Smoke. The Crusher and the Bruiser. They are determined.
So who else was on there? Terry Funk. Now, I guess, definitely the 70s. I mean, he goes through all the decades, but he cut some phenomenal promos in the 70s. So let's talk about the Funker here. His brother was not a great talker. I'll just tell you that for free. But what made Terry Funk such a good promo for you, Pete?
To me, the guy ran the gauntlet. I mean, he could cut the serious promo. He could cut the funny promo. He could actually even interweave both of them where it was funny, yet Jesus, it got real quick. I think he's one of the great talkers of all time, and he could go start small and then he end up really big in his promos. It was just I think he cut a promo way different than most any other people. We've seen people, when you talk here the term often imitated, never duplicated. I think Terry Funk's promo has often been imitated, but it's never been quite duplicated. We even hear like Mick Foley. He made a living of stealing Funk stuff and like just twisting it a little, to make it more modern for himself. And then in the 90s, Foley became a great promo later on. I'm sure we'll get to him. But yeah, I always thought Funk was just such a believable promo and stuff, especially when he's in I think in Florida. I always thought his promos against Dusty were the ones that I always remember, and they were just so phenomenal and stuff like that. I mean, even that one where he's in the shower with the him and Lawler are great too, and then he's in the shower doing the Floridian with the freaking oil can. That thing's a classic and could arguably, people could, it could be the number one promo of all time. It's definitely in that echelon of talking about greatest promos of all time.
Yeah, and of course the egg sucking dog.
Yeah,
we have to. But
let's.
One of the things that people don't give Funk enough credit for, I mean, he's got this weird mixture, doesn't he, of menace. He's menacing. Like, he can be quite disturbing at times. He's funny on top of that. But he's also, like, really intelligent as well in a weird way. And it's the kind of, like, the mixture of someone who's actually quite intelligent and really menacing and quite funny as well.
Yeah,
and all of those three things at once, all the time.
Probably one of the top 10 biggest wrestling, that's probably one of the top 10 highest wrestling IQs probably ever in the wrestling business.
Yeah. It's just staggering the different like levels that Funk can hit on all kinds. As a babyface, he's amazing. Like in Japan, he's just unbelievable babyface. And then as a heel against Flair and in 89, and just being like the believability where I thought, this was real. This wasn't fake wrestling. He was trying to kill Flair with a plastic bag, and just it's unreal. Like he's such an amazing performer.
And then you go into the 90s and beyond, and he's crazy Terry Funk, or the legend Terry Funk, or kind old Terry Funk. It's just so many roles he can slip into throughout his career, because the guy was a freaking legend and a god among wrestlers. It's just he's just an incredible promo.
I want to just point out, here's a really cool thing about Terry Funk's performing ability. Is so he shows up in WWF right as rock and wrestling and everything's real over the top, starting to get real over the top, and he fits right in.
Yeah.
Fits in perfectly on performance-wise, of course, but on the promos. And he can be just as ridiculous and fit that situation. And then leaves, a year or two passes, NWA, they're doing a really serious angle, and he's serious.
Yeah.
And but he's still Terry Funk. You know, he can play both roles and all the ones you mentioned, Pete. But those two in particular juxtaposed against each other, I always thought was kind of, he's awesome.
Yeah, you know, you think about, well, like Johnny just said those, but we've seen world champion promo, Terry Funk. We've seen Terry Funk as the hired gun promo. We've seen the old Terry Funk, the adorable Country Funk, the Chainsaw Terry, Terry Funk. I mean, it just runs the freaking gauntlet.
Yeah, and Pete, to your point about old kindly Terry, when he does that, he makes you immediately forgive him for whatever evil shit he did like 3 months earlier.
Yeah.
Well, you know me, I'm just an old crazy old man. Oh, yeah, he is. And you forgive him. It's great, man. He's so good.
One of the tiny little subtleties I like about a heel Terry Funk promo, especially when he's a heel, he's got that little glint in his eye that makes you think he believes his own bullshit, but there's a little twinkle in his eye that lets you know, it kind of lets you in on the fact that
he's scared.
That yeah, it's a very weird thing, but like he's kind of like I there's something about the look in his eye that you get that kind of lets you know that he knows at the same time. It's something, it's hard to put your finger on, but it's phenomenal whatever he does.
You know, I'm sure being the wrestling fans that you are well aware of the NWA, the largest wrestling conglomerate in wrestling today, with over 220 syndicated stations. And I'm sure you're also familiar with the AWA and the WWF. These are all multi-million dollar organizations. But yet, there is a new one on the sunrise. On the sunrise in Florida, and do you know what that organization is? That is the FFF. Funk, and Florida. Believe me, the Funk Brothers have come to Florida, and now we don't have millions of dollars. We don't have money to throw around. We don't have 220 syndicated stations. But what are we? We are individuals, and we are the best athletes in professional wrestling today. Now, aren't you Haitians? Aren't you Cubans? Aren't you crackers so fortunate to have the Funk Brothers around? Dory and Terry Funk. Now, what has happened to Black Jack Mulligan? Well, he's become what he once was before. He is a chicken-plucking chicken back in Sweetwater, Texas, because he realized that if he stayed around the state of Florida, that he wouldn't be able to compete to be on the main events, because he is a lesser caliber wrestler than what the Funks are. He is not a has-been. I hate to inform you people that the old prune face, wrinkled up Black Jack Mulligan is what I have always said he was, is a never was. Now, we have got Mike Rotundo. Oh, Mike, aren't you so pretty? Aren't you so handsome? Look in yourself in the mirror, and there is the last time that you will ever get to see yourself looking like that. Because we have got the money up. The dollars, the silver dollars, money on the line that you will be putting out of wrestling.
Now let's get down to Kevin Sullivan. Is this all that you have left is Kevin Sullivan? And he's crying that he has not Black Jack Mulligan anymore. Well, he's begging for the American dream. Don't you realize Dusty Rhodes will not come in here and help you, Sullivan? Do you know why? Because he is nothing more than an overbearing, obnoxious, putrid, egg-sucking dog that wouldn't come in here and take a chance. Because he's yellow like his hair. He won't take a chance being your partner, Sullivan. No, he wouldn't take a chance with the Funks with a Sherman tank. He wouldn't take a chance with the Funks with a battleship. He would not take a chance with the Funks in the ring with Ollie North. And neither would Ollie North take a chance in getting in the ring with my brother here on myself.
Well, Terry, I just want to promise everybody that this Florida Heavyweight Championship belt, which is what we came to the state of Florida for, is going to...
What else is... who else was on this list, Pete?
Oh, the Assassin. I always thought he was like one of the most sinister promos of all time, and with that voice, the way he had the voice, and he was another promo where you just believed. I thought him and Dusty, on the footage I've seen, were just incredible promos in Florida. He also played Lucifer. Even when he became Paul Orndorff's manager, I mean, even though he looked ridiculous with the big fat head and the mask, he could still cut a good promo, man. And it was just his whole entire man, because his promos were always great, because the Assassin always had incredible angles to go with his promos. And the ones I always remember specifically are him and Dusty. I always thought they were just magic together on the stick.
And we all watched one together, and really memorable, didn't we? It was the one with Wrestling 2?
Yes. Yeah, that was an amazing performance by both guys in that promo.
If you haven't seen that, the Assassin is just so damn intelligent and evil at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about high IQs. He's got to be up there as well.
Yep.
Just based on the stuff he says in his promos.
Well, he's reasoning for why he wears a mask. He's like, the reason I wear a mask is because I don't want to be bothered by these idiots. I want to live my life. Like, that's the best reason ever.
Well, I'm going to do my very best to conduct myself as a professional. You know, I've had a lot of people at time and time again to ask me why I wear my mask. The Assassin has his outlooks on why he wears his, and I have mine. I had difficulty in getting matches at times, and so therefore I took the opportunity to put the mask on, and I find myself in a much better position in getting matches, kind of matches that I like to have.
You made a very interesting comment earlier in the program, sir, that you had vowed that one day you're going to remove his mask.
Well, first of all, let me elaborate briefly on his statements. If you've ever had any trouble getting a match, it's only because you never approach me, pal. And as far as your great ability is concerned, as far as I'm concerned, your great ability and your great reputation is certainly suspect as far as I'm concerned. Now, for the information of the people in the viewing audience, why do I wear a mask? I wear a mask simply because I do not want the notoriety that would be involved by being the television personality and the athletic personality that I am. When I go to a restaurant to eat, I don't want a bunch of fans coming up to me bugging me for autographs. I don't want a bunch of people coming up and asking me about myself, my profession, and about my private life. That's exactly what a mask affords me, the opportunity to live a private life. Well, that's his outlook. I have mine. You know, I also have had the opportunity of holding many, many individual titles, like the Georgia Heavyweight title, a tag team title, the North American Heavyweight title, and several others. I've been awarded numerous trophies, and I'm very proud of that. And I find that by having this mask, It's, you know, it means everything in the world to me. If I lose my mask, I feel I've lost everything. So immediately it tells you that my mask is means everything to me, and I intend to hang on to it. And there's no one that's going to take it one way or the other, regardless of what their thoughts may be.
Well, first of all, you know, it's ridiculous for us to even stand here and conduct an in-depth interview, because you're talking to a man who is a former this and a former that. What the people are really interested in is what's happening now. And what's happening now is me. What's happening now is the team of the Assassins. We're not former anything. We are the current Georgia Tag Team Champions. And as far as this man is concerned, the only reason that he has the reputation for holding the Georgia Heavyweight Championship longer than any other man is because I didn't happen to be in the area at the time that you held the belt. Because certainly, sir, you do not have enough ability in the ring or anywhere else to hold on to that belt or any other thing against the caliber of talent you're looking at right here, brother.
Well, now, gentlemen, I'm trying to keep this down.
Well, listen, I didn't come out here to get, you know, tore down by anybody. I don't have to stand here and listen to his derogatory remarks, his sarcastic remarks. Hey, let me tell you something, Assassin. The only time you can ever do anything is when you have someone by your side. I have yet to see any time you do anything by yourself. You stand there and you talk and you rap about how great you are. Why in the hell don't you do something on your own once in a while?
Oh, my. Aren't we becoming emotional? You know, that's one of your problems. That's why you have never been able to achieve the one little thing in professional wrestling that I've been able to achieve, and that's greatness. Because you cannot control your temper. You have an uncontrollable temper, and an uncontrollable temper only denotes someone that has a feeble mind. And I suspect, sir, that you are not overly intelligent, because an overly intelligent person, or even a normally intelligent person, would certainly be able to control himself under any type of adverse conditions.
Well, now, let me tell you something right now, Pusgut. I am what I am because of my reputation and my hotness, you want to call it. That's what keeps me going where I'm going. And if you think you're so damn tough, hey, come on, let's go in the ring right now. You think you're so doggone tough, let's get it on in there. Hey, there's no restrictions in that ring, pal. Why don't you come on in the ring right now? You've got such a big mouth, come on.
What a grandstand play this is on the part of Mr. Wrestling Number Two. I'm surprised that he doesn't have all the forms in the news.
Was there anyone else on your list there, Pete, that you mentioned?
John Tolos, super charismatic promo. Him and Blassie did huge business in Los Angeles, feuding. He was just, you know, even when we saw him on, remember, even as old as we see him on Slamboree, and he's like hitting on Missy Hyatt. You actually believed when him talking that he was going to take Missy Hyatt home and fuck her, because he was
really
such,
like, that's hard.
Because he, oh, I know, but not when you're a young kid, you didn't hear the stories yet. When I watched it, you know, live, I'm like, damn, this guy's charismatic. Then later on, I mean, you know, there's not a ton of it, but there's some audio of him and stuff, and there's some, you know, other promos. But he's a damn good promo.
And was Blassie the last one?
Blassie and Bill Watts.
Oh, and Bill Watts. Okay.
Oh, yeah, and Jonathan Boyd. And Jonathan Boyd is another guy I liked.
Okay, well, why don't we talk about Blassie briefly? We've seen them a lot on Titans, although less so it seems like James has not been putting on as many promos on these later discs that we've been watching. But what makes Blassie a good promo for you, Pete?
Again, it's he has a sinister evilness to him, but he also understands the aspect of carnyism and the aspect of making sure it's entertaining. As the manager, we saw him like would be able to, even he could take it as a shit aspect and make it entertaining. He could cut the money promo. I mean, again, like for me, him and Tolos's audio interviews I've heard, I thought were some of the best I've ever heard. And Blassie is that, but it, for me, it was like he understood his character so well.
Johnny, any thoughts?
As far as you say Carney, I think on the performance level, he's a carnival barker. Because he's spewing nothing but bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's screaming lies, nothing but bullshit, and antagonizing, you know, the good guys and the crowd. But he's not winking about his bullshit. Like, yeah, right? He's like, he cheated, and, you know, and he slipped on a banana peel that he threw in the ring. I saw it. No one else saw it or some shit. And he's so frustrating with that. That eventually, you know, someone wants to get at him because he can just rile them up. When someone's just spewing that much bullshit and making people angry with it and never letting up, that was Blassie's gift. It was great.
Any thoughts, Kenny?
Yeah, I love Blassie too. Just a great villain. You know, the look, everything. You know, he had the LA polish to him that. It fit well into the New York scene in the 70s. And yeah, just a really great character too.
Freddie Blassie, that's right. You know, I don't approve of you neither. I don't like the way you announce this individual. The man's name is Stan the Bounty Hunter Hansen. And when you talk to him, talk that say his whole name, not that individual. When you talk about Bruno Sammartino, you say the living legend. When you talk about those stinking Indians, you say the incredible and speedy, flashy Indians. You talk about Monsoon, you say the sensational superhuman heavyweight. What are you talking about him for, huh? Talk about him. He's a super heavyweight, the super giant of the wrestling profession, the world's heavyweight
Stan
wrestling
Hansen
champion.
Joining forces with Gas House Gilbert and the Sunnyside Garden.
And finally, of course, there's Bill Watts. Now, how much like Bill Watts, the wrestler in the 70s, have you seen promo-wise, Pete? Or is this bit mainly based on what you've seen in Mid-South in the 80s?
Mostly based off the 80s, but we've seen enough of his stuff. There's a few enough promos out there of his stuff in the 70s, where he's at as a heel. He was, you know, bombastic but assure of himself, a real cock, almost like a cocky ass kicking heel. But yeah, but again, it's also when he wore the white hat as the which we saw in like the run for Last Stampede with against Cornette, and even on commentary and stuff, he just knew he was a great promo. And he he's one of the best, and we definitely saw it in the 80s, but even in the 70s we saw it. He was a walking tall kick-ass kick-ass taking name style babyface promo, and everything he said you believed and held water to you, you know.
Any thoughts on Watts, Johnny?
Yeah, everything Pete said is true, but from my perception when I was first watching it, I just thought he was an asshole. I'm like when Eddie Gilbert put the flag on him, I was just cheering. So, but I was convinced in what he believed everything he was saying, you know, real hardcore. I just didn't like what he was saying, you know. But yeah, he was amazingly convincing, is Bill Watts.
My favorite Bill Watts thing from the 70s is still that match where he commentates over
Jack Briscoe, right?
Over the Jack Briscoe. I love that. So much fun.
Only thing is, this is going to have a happy ending. We're going to get rid of some bums. You see, Ole Anderson's been doing his thing. Let me tell you, I never trusted Ole Anderson because I can remember all the rotten things he and his brothers done. Here's a man his own family can't even get along with. He has to stay up in the North Woods by himself on a completely isolated site selling toothpicks because nobody can stand this guy. I was wanting to tell wrestling to. And all those guys that took him back and saying he had a change of heart. There's no change of heart. You ever heard a tiger change its stripes?
No way. No way.
Well, Ole Anderson didn't change either. And the double crosser, the whole thing, I believe, was a plot. The whole thing was going down the whole time to get rid of Dusty Rhodes. This is what he had in his mind all the time. And everybody knows how close I am.
Okay, well, I think with Johnny, do you have anyone?
Yes.
Kelly and Pete have not mentioned from the 1970s.
Not a lot.
Really good talkers.
But I do have a few. We mentioned Mr. Wrestling too. From what we've seen, and it's not a lot, but he was a great talker, and maybe we saw more of it in the 80s, but since he was friends with President Carter, I put him in the 70s. Thunderbolt Patterson, I mentioned. Yep. Harley Race.
Okay.
I always thought was a really great promo, and I, again, haven't seen much of the 70s, but I think of Harley as a, I mean, I haven't seen much of his 70s promos, mainly 80s, but I think of him as a 70s guy. So Harley Race.
He's got a very special voice. We'll come to Harley. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bob Armstrong, I'm putting there too. Okay. Everything I've seen with Bob Armstrong, he's been amazing.
Which is funny. I put Bob in the 90s. I have him in the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, but he was also incredible in the 90s. I also had him in the 90s, too, so there you go.
Exactly. It's Smoky Mountain, right? Yeah. Ivan Koloff, I'm putting in the 70s well. Mm-hmm. I think Ivan was a great promo. Amazing promo. Blackjack Mulligan is on my list.
Really good promo. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Good promo. And last but not least, another guy who I have seen, not a ton, but enough 70s stuff of his promos, Ole Anderson.
Right. I have Ole in my 80s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think we can deal with Ole as a 70s guy, even though I'm basing it mainly on 80s. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's go through some of these then. So who was the first guy you said there, Johnny?
Well, I didn't say Ernie Ladd because I forgot that I wrote that. But again, that's based on the 80s as well. First guy I said was Mr. Wrestling 2.
Okay, so so tell me about Wrestling 2 as a promo. He's kind of like a southern boy, basically.
It's there's not much else to add to the. What we talked about, Dusty and Superstar Graham, it's the Southern jive. He's the jive talking guy. But then into the 80s, when he's, you know, Magnum's coach and everything, he's like every asshole coach ever. And he's good. You know, he's really good. Especially when he turns heel and he starts telling everyone to go fuck themselves and fuck you, Junkyard Dog, and fuck you, Magnum, yeah, you little punk. He's great. You know, he's just a great promo. That's, you know, that's what I've seen, and that's all I got.
Who's the next one?
Well, I mentioned Thunderbolt Patterson again. Same thing.
Yeah.
But you know, he's the black guy that all the white people stole their act from. You know, just like the blues. Just like Led Zeppelin ripping off everybody. You know. Bob Armstrong, again, and I'm going to let Pete talk about it, but Southern as fuck didn't always come off as a redneck, though. Just came off as someone who's going to give you a good whooping, you know, but for the right reasons, you know, and he had that vibe to him. You know, and we know Southern keeps coming up in our great promos list.
Yeah.
Ivan Koloff, you mentioned 80s. We'll go with 80s. Blackjack Mulligan was menacing. And with a Texas, long Texas drawl, and he was going to tell you what he's going to do to you. You know, and he came off as a villain. And as a babyface, he was that avenging cowboy hero who was going to kick your ass. You know, so he could fluctuate between the two characters and sounded great. And then I mentioned Harley, which I think you wanted to get to.
Yeah, well, I mean, Harley's got a unique voice, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, grizzled and gruff. I've seen one of the best promos ever from Harley in Australia. Have you seen that one, Kelly? It's a really, really amazing one.
Maybe years ago.
It's basically Harley races down in, like, Australia on that old show that they had down there.
Right.
And he's defending the NWA title. And I can't even remember the guy he's against now, like some Australian guy, basically, but he was like a star at the time. Mm-hmm. And he like cuts his head, Harley does, and he cuts an absolutely psychotic promo And it's one of the best things I've ever
seen. Oh, I've seen that.
It's incredible, that promo. It's from, it's the best. That's Harley's career promo for me that I've seen. It's just insane. So he could obviously pull it out of the bag when he wanted to. Mm-hmm. I guess a lot of the Harley that we see, especially in the 80s and so on, he's a lot more subdued or a lot more kind of like, I mean, he's gruff, but he's actually quite, like, often not very emotive, I find, in a lot of his promos.
I thought, like, in the Flair feud in 83, I thought he was so believable as a guy who would put a bounty on Flair. He's so no-nonsense, and his promos are right to the point with that rough, voice. And actually, Johnny and I have seen a lot of good ones on NWA On Demand, like that Tony Atlas thing where somehow Atlas ends up bench-pressing him. He didn't slam him, but he freaking just... They're both verbally jousting with each other, and all of a sudden Atlas just picks him up and presses him over his head. on the interview stage was just absolutely nuts. He's the epitome of a no-nonsense, gruff, believable promo that you believed, especially as a world champion coming into your town and going against the local hero. I thought he had that promo down pat.
I told you, Miller, it was nothing but an out-and-out conspiracy. I've known you. I respected you. I respect your ability in the ring till now. You Pearl Harbor. I can't say what I want to say, Miller. If I could,
you too. But I bloody well pinned you, didn't I?
Let me tell you something. It's going to come down to you, me. It's coming down to where whatever I got to do, I'm going to beat you. I've come over here twice. I've represented the world of wrestling. I have done it with the utmost respect for wrestling. Until now, Miller, I'm coming back. And when I get back, I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to hurt you somehow. If I've got to do it that way, fine. You have insulted the world heavyweight champion.
Well, you heard it from the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, defeated by Australia's own heavyweight champion, Ronnie Millen. I tell you what.
All right, well, and, oh, you did mention Ernie. We have to talk about Ernie Ladd.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
Were you going to save Ollie for the 80s?
Yeah, well, I think we'll deal with Horseman all at once, I think. Let's just put it out there.
That's why you're the leader.
let's see now. So, Ernie Ladd, has there ever been a cooler guy? Like, just in any walk of life? He's just incredibly cool, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, in real life, too, you know. But when you got a guy, and Bill Watts decides, you know, the amazingly racially sensitive Bill Watts, books a ghetto street fight, and Ernie Ladd decides, okay, that means I'm going to show up in my finest clothes. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. You are the coolest motherfucker ever. And you back it up in all your promos. Ernie Ladd was amazing. So cool.
Yeah. I love him in that Strongbow deal that we saw.
Yeah. Of course,
vicariously through Ladd there and stuff.
Yeah, but not just stuffing the feathers on the
front. Parv wants to be a 7 foot tall, cool, badass black guy who beats up Chief J. Strongbow.
Parv did a computer generated image of himself and with Ladd doing all the damage and stuff.
Whereas lines he was coming out with, you know, yellow belly and all of that sort of stuff. It's just so awesome.
That super cool promo he cuts from 76 in New York on basically he's calling Bobo Brazil and Uncle Tom.
Yeah.
But he's also insulting Vince McMahon Jr. at the same time. And the look on Vince's face. And he's like, you want to smack me, don't you, Mr. Announce a Man?
Mr. Announce a Man, you want to slap me, don't you? Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, he's just, and Vince's like, I think I might shit my pants.
He does tear Vince apart in that promo. It's hilarious. Ernie Ladd, phenomenal promo. Not a very good commentator. But,
no, very much like Superstar Billy Graham, yeah. Actually.
It's weird how that happens, isn't it?
I don't know, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, now waiting for 6 feet, 9 inches of Big Cat Ernie Ladd. Mr. Ladd, if you would be so kind as to indulge us with an interview. Taking it easy, I guess, back in the dressing room, resting up for a match here this week. I understand you're going to be taking on not one but two individuals here very shortly in a handicap match.
It's no question. They take the best athlete and match him against as many wrestlers as they can possibly find for him. One man is not good enough for me. What I asked for two men tonight, but they did not give me the two men I asked for. I asked for Pesky and Bobo Brazil for a warm-up in order to... Shut up! Shut up! It's obvious, as I said, I asked for Pesky and Bobo Brazil because I could warm up on these bombs for Bruno Sammartino. That's who I really want. Bruno Sammartino is who I want on television. I don't want to beat Bruno Sammartino in an arena so a few people can see him, a few thousand people can see him. I want millions of people to see Bruno Sammartino embarrassed. I want to wrestle Bruno Sammartino on television so I can beat him and let millions of people see him embarrassed. That's why I asked for Pesky and Bobo Brazil. Give me Dominic DiNucci in there with that team. Any of them, that's what I really wanted tonight on television. I wanted to beat Pesky and Bobo Brazil, or possibly a Dominic DiNucci. This is who I really wanted to beat. And I'm quite disappointed that they would not give me these two bombs that I really, really wanted.
Who would not give you, Mr. Ladd? Are you saying that these individuals would not sign for a match with you, or the matchmaker, promoter? Who is it?
The promoter asked him about it, and they were afraid to accept it on television for the embarrassment. For the embarrassment, because I want to embarrass. What I plan to do is run Bobo Brazil out of here completely, because he's not a wrestler.
What do you mean he's not a wrestler?
He's not an athlete. Any man that go around and butt people in the head with his head, he just can't be too smart. All right, and this guy Pesky, he's strong, just the opposite of Samson. Just the opposite.
How's the opposite of Samson? What do you mean by that?
He's strong under the arms, not in the arms. He's strong under the arms. There's no question about it. Pesky is not an athlete. Pesky is a muscle head. He stayed up all night studying for a blood test one night, so how can he consider himself an athlete? So it's no question. People like this, I have no regards for them. Let's talk about athletes, like Superstar Billy Graham. These are athletes. Let's talk about real athletes, the Golden Greek. Real athlete. Let's talk about super, super, super athletes. As I said, like Superstar Billy Graham, the Golden Greek Spurious Aries, and the Russian Bear. These are great athletes.
Would you consider yourself in that category?
Oh, well, of course. You know, I could take, if they want a real winner in the Super Bowl, you could take, in the Super Bowl, that would win the Super Bowl, give me a front four on defense of Ivan Koloff, Billy Graham. That sounds good to you, don't it, Mr. TV announcer? Ivan Koloff, Billy Graham,
Mr. Ladd,
the Golden Greek, the Golden Greek, and yours truly, Ernie Ladd. That would be my front four in football. We could win the world. We wouldn't need defensive backs. We wouldn't need defensive backs because the quarterback could never throw the ball. We'd have him fly to his back. And as far as Bruno Sammartino is concerned, the biggest farce for a champion in the world, he sends people out like Dominic DiNucci out before him. A feel out a man so he won't get hurt. Dominic DiNucci is just a stooge. He go out, and you notice Dominic DiNucci almost loses his life because people be wanting to get to Bruno Sammartino so bad that they beat this poor boy unmerciful. They beat him unmerciful. Now Bobo Brazil is a stooge now. He's going to try to protect Bruno Sammartino. What an Uncle Tom Bobo Brazil is. He stinks as far as I'm concerned. Bobo Brazil. That's what I think of him. I think that of Ivan Puskey. Dominic DiNuccia. It stink, Mr. TV announcer. You don't give me that smirky look on your face. You're just a TV announcer. And I know I burn you up every time I look at you, TV announcer. It make you sick, don't it? Don't it, boy? It make you sick, don't it? But look at you. You wish you could do something about it, don't you? Well, put some tights on, Mr. TV announcer. You can do anything you want. Boy, I know I have you mad. You wish you were 10 pounds heavy. You'd slap me when you're Mr. TV announcer. But don't ever make that mistake, TV announcer. Don't ever get that.
We'll be right back.
Is there anyone else from the 70s we haven't I do want to touch on Grand Wizard, because I think Grand Wizard is super underrated. I mean, when I was putting that thing together a few years ago, I listened to like old promos, like a bit like you were doing with the Tolos stuff, Pete. Yeah. On the there are like audio tapes and things. Some of the local promos Grand Wizard cut was just amazing. And in fact, the 1-2 punch that he had with Superstar Graham Kelly, the way he'd be able to set up, like he'd often like do this thing where he sets up somebody else to, like, so he does the first half of the promo and then the wrestler does the second half, but just seemed to have really good lines, and he's got that like smoker voice. He's got like a bit like Harley Race. He's got, and I just like the way he oozes like hatred out of every syllable, really good. And some of the Detroit footage that is out there as well.
Right.
He's pretty good in that stuff too. So I just think Wizard is a bit, you know, it was a really good promo. So guess why he was around for such a long time.
I think him and Graham were so good together with that 1-2 punch, like you said, because they were... They belonged together. They were both super flashy and both loudmouths, but it was like a comedy duo who had perfect timing and knew who to throw to who when. But it was almost like the hippie acid version of Heenan and Bockwinkel all those years.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, they were a perfect team of two guys who could both talk.
Yeah.
One of the things with Wizard too is that he's another one of those guys that was like super articulate in his own way. Like he'd come up with big words once in a while, which is like sounds weird when it's coming out of someone who's got that kind of his kind of accent and voice and things. But I don't know. He definitely was clever, I guess, the Grand Wizard.
His background was as a DJ. In radio before he got into wrestling, so he had kind of a training in speaking that other wrestlers never had, right? I think
when they were playing backgammon or whatever the fuck they were playing back there, he wasn't using that voice.
This Friday night to face sensational Rocky Johnson. Would you care to comment, Grand Wizard?
Well, to begin with, I see nothing sensational about Rocky Johnson except his delusions of grandeur. He must have had a dream that he, too, was going to someday be a champion. Well, Rocky Johnson, let me tell you on behalf of superstar Billy Graham, any ideas that may have come into that empty head of yours that you could beat superstar Graham, you're a sick man. And after the match is over, you're going to be even sicker, because nobody in the wide world uses superstar Billy Graham as a stepping stone. We'll reverse the procedure.
Well, that was our consideration of some of the great talkers of the 1970s. On a later episode, we're going to come back to the 1980s, and then maybe one day we'll come back to the 1990s, to the present day, to consider some of the great, because there were some really good talkers in the 90s.
Now, before we head out, though, Parv, how about we all name our favorite 70s promo, our number one guy?
Okay, let's do that. Let's go. Yeah, let's go around then. Who's your number one guy, Kelly?
I think I'll go with Bruno, just because I'm probably going to be the only one who picks him, and I love him.
That's a great criteria.
Well, I'm assuming it's going to be Dusty and maybe Albano and whatever. So, no, I mean, I explained my case for Bruno already. I think he's great, very believable. One of the best of all time, in my opinion.
Pete?
Oh, Terry Funk, hands down. I thought he's the best 70s promo. I mean, from what I've seen from him as world champion and from 75 on, I mean, he was just incredible promo. Just whatever we needed from him. Babyface, heel, serious, funny, incredible promo.
Johnny, who are you going with?
You know what? I'm gonna believe the man. I'm going with Thunderbolt Patterson. They did all rip him off. Fuck them. He originated that style, and I believe the man. So that's my favorite style, and he must have been the one. Because I'm going to put Dusty in the 80s, you see.
I see. Okay, so you're going with Thunderbolt Patterson based mainly on hearsay.
I've heard him give tons of promos. I've heard lots of Thunderbolt Patterson promos. But I'm based on the fact that apparently they all ripped him off, and I believe the brother man. So he gets my vote.
So I kind of want to pick Ernie Ladd just based on sheer coolness. But I think ultimately Pete is right that Terry Funk is just so awesome, and he's got a lot of really good ones in the 70s as well. So I think I'll go with Terry Funk.
Yeah, I like that. I like that saying. Ultimately, Pete was right. I like that, Barb. You're absolutely correct, sir. That's why we're number one and two.
Dude, you know, Pete's gonna isolate that drop and just use it in every show.
If I only had real skills.
Pete is right quite a lot. I mean, let's be honest.
That'd and then, be even better.
Well, he is. I mean. That's kind of why I like doing shows with him, because he agrees with me an awful lot of the time.
We're the Can-Am connection.
Yeah, no.
except it's a British guy. I don't know how to work.
It's more like Luger and Davy Boy. It's just awkward.
The allied powers.
Everyone thinks it stinks.
The Anglo-Americans. I don't know. So next time we're going to go into the 80s. It'll probably be a longer show because there's I think basically if I was to make a top 100 list of great talkers, probably 80% of them will come from the 80s because there's lots and lots of them. And we've given the 80s guys like Ole Anderson and Ric Flair as well. So, you know, there'll be a lot to talk about. And then eventually, down the road, we'll get to our Mount Rushmore in this ongoing series on the greatest talkers ever. Our regular Titan timeline will also return as well, right, Curly? We're going to get into 1983, is that right? Or have we still got a sense of...
No, we finally finished 1982. So, and you know, we got a new year coming up here with 2017. So it's fitting that we start 1983 probably in the new year. And I think since we have all this extra footage now on YouTube, thank you, Richard Land, and we'll, I think, expand the confines of the original set. And we're going to go out with a flourish here and have an extra special 1983 for everybody. We're going to just kill ourselves with crappy matches and bad wrestling.
We're just along the way. We're just dragging out the death.
Oh yeah. But it's going to be great. Great way to go.
Yeah. It feels funny. I mean, it feels like the WWF's the dying promotion, but it's about to explode, when we're fixing to go into.
That's true.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, listeners. And till next time for Titans of Wrestling.
Jerry Lawler wants to become a real Floridian. not a transplant. The king wants to become a Floridian. Well, I would like to know exactly how it feels to be a true Florida cracker. So I have Quaker State Super Blend Motor Oil, and I am going to show you people how it feels to be a true Florida cracker. And right here, I have 5 pounds of dirty, filthy dirt. And that's exactly what it is. And I have got this dirt entirely all over my body. And now, I know what it feels like to be a dirty, stinky, greasy Florida cracker. And it's something that I never want to feel like again. What I would like to do is to challenge that fool, Jerry Lawler, to this kind of a match, to where he would go ahead and wrestle me. And if I defeat him, I'd get to take a quart of motor oil and pour over his body and take 5 pounds of dirt and pour that over his body and turn him into a dirty, filthy, stinking Florida cracker.